Welcome to the Dance Center podcast. I am your host, Claire French, and I'm joining you from the traditional unceded territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh peoples, also known as Vancouver, Canada. I'll be talking to dancers, choreographers, and other members of the dance world here on the West Coast to find out more about their creative work and practices, and to discuss what it means to us to be dance professionals today. Thanks for joining us. Danny Nielsen is originally from Calgary and is one of Canada's finest tap dancers. Currently based in Vancouver, he is extremely in demand as a teacher, choreographer, and performer. Danny's prolific technical skill and musical sensibility have launched him onto the international stage, teaching and performing at many national and international tap festivals. He's created and performed in multiple shows, dancing and choreographing along with NYC's Lisa Latouche and a list of the finest tap dancers. His work is full of the visual beauty of tap dance and engages the auditory senses through raw improvisation, captivating rhythms, and memorable melodies. One of Canada's tap dance stars, Danny Nielsen combines dazzling technique, natural musicality, and a drive to constantly innovate with a heartfelt desire to honor the rich traditions of the form. We passionately talk about respect for tradition, lineage, responsibility, and play. Please enjoy our conversation. I hope you do as much as I did. Thank you for agreeing to do this podcast, a conversation / interview.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, pleasure. We're talking to you because you have an upcoming show in May at the Dance Center, and we'll get into that a little bit later. But this is also an opportunity to find out more about you, the artist, the person, and for us to share some of your history. So I'd love it if you could talk about maybe your beginnings in tap as you would like, as early as you would like to go back, maybe being from Calgary, Alberta, and maybe the beginnings there and some of your connections with even decidedly jazz and those kinds of companies might be a good place to start.
Yeah, for sure. So I had an older sister that danced, so, you know, stuck at the dance studio all the time, finally decided to try a dance class. And it was a regular, you know, competition studio. So I think I started with jazz and then tap the following year. And I was like into it. It was cool. You know, I think something that was always important was having older dancers to look up to at the studio. There was one particular older male dancer there named Greg Farkas, who started recommending me to like watch movies with tap dance in it. And so I remember going to Blockbuster and renting, you know, the movies, and, you know, I checked out Fred Astaire and, you know, Gene Kelly, and it was cool. And then I saw the movie Tap, and that was like, what is this? And I actually just watched that movie recently with a group of students of mine, which is just crazy to me now that with all the accessibility with YouTube and everything, nobody even knows who Gregory Hines is, let alone like Fred Astaire. Like none of these kids know who anybody is. So I felt it was important to show the movie Tap in my class. And then just, you know, rewatching it and seeing, you know, the storyline and how much they really broke down the struggles that tap dancers face and, you know, from the daily grind, I guess. Anyways, so I watched that movie and I was very just like taken by the men and women in there, particularly the challenge scene, which, you know, I you know, I'm hard on my students about being able to name all of the dancers in this scene. So, you know, Henry Letang on piano, Gregory Hines, Sammy Davis Jr., Arthur Duncan, Jimmy Slide, Harold Nicholas, Bunny Briggs, Steve Kondos, Sam Man Sims, and then also Pat Rico, as well as Steve Kondos. So I think I covered. All right.
I mean, absolutely. There's so many. And just to invest in finding out more about them, you know, and their histories is, you know, kind of overwhelming as well, right? In terms of dance history.
Yeah. I mean, and so I was like just pulled by this movie. Yeah. And that kind of started my like obsession with tap dance footage. And I remember back in the day, there was like one website called Off Jazz. And it had these short little clips maybe 30 second clips. And then, like, I remember seeing, like, Ted Levy, Van Porter, Savion Glover from all these clips. And I, honestly, not until, like, maybe, like, a month ago did I actually realize what some of these clips were from. It was the Kennedy Center, honors of the Nicholas Brothers. And I'm like, now I'm, like, going back and seeing that. I'm like, oh, cool, and putting it together. As I find I'm consistently doing is just still putting it together, you know. Anyways,
I love that I'm putting it together.
Well, I mean, this history is so complex, and so I want to say also not necessarily well documented. It's an oral tradition, right? Mm-hmm. So we put an emphasis on respecting and listening to our elders, because that's the way this art form is really passed on. And it, you know, there's a lot of discrepancies out there. If you look up, like, on Google, history of tap dance, it's like, nope, like, nope. That's not really the story, you know? This thing comes from Black culture, and I very much recognize that I'm a guest in this art form. And, you know, I feel like it's my responsibility to, first of all, let folks know that that's what it is. And then also, you know, continue to research, continue to try to honor my elders, continue to try to do my best in being able to represent this art form.
Yeah.
With the utmost integrity. And then another part of that is the dancing element too, which, you know, I try to hold my end of the bargain up there. And, you know, there's a lot that goes into being a tap dancer. It's not just merely having feet, you know?
I can tell you, I'm learning again after 3 decades off, and I am blown away by what tap dancers can do over and over. And I keep feeling like I'm never, ever going to get there, but I don't know where I'm trying to get, because I look at what some of you do, including you, and I think it's impossible. And then I start to learn a little bit about how, and I realize it's not impossible. It's just absolutely phenomenal. So
I'm humbled every day when I go in the studio, because it's like some days, you know, you start to develop a relationship with your craft. And some days you're besties, and other days you're not. and there's different factors that come into it. You know what's happening the day before, what you're thinking about for the rest of the day, kind of thing. And it's like, yeah, I just, you know, I feel like also, you know, going back to the movie Tap.
Yeah.
When I watched it with my students, I was like, how old were they? Like, I had to do like a little bit of research. I was like, Gregory was like 43. 40.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh man, like, he was killing. And I'm like, you know, and I believe he said, you know, he didn't start to feel comfortable as an improvisationalist until he was like 40, you know, which is crazy to me. And then, like, you know, I think Slide was in his 60s. And so it really is a lifelong commitment to the craft and to the form, to the discoveries, to the small nuances, to everything that goes along with it. Sometimes it's overwhelming to think of all that there is to do, and to look up and study and everything.
Yeah.
So,
wow. So do you feel like when you were attracted to it back then, and of course this is, you know, kind of reflecting back, or like benefit of hindsight or something, do you think it was the rhythm? Or do you think it was the actual, do you think it was the movement? Do you think it was?
You know, when I think back to that one, you know, the challenge scene, I would say I think I was attracted to the culture of the form, you know, because it's a culture. It's not necessarily, you know, just a dance form. Like, you don't just like, well, I went to work today, hang up my tap shoes, now I'm like doing something. Like, you eat, breathe, sleep, you live as a tap dancer. You don't take it off ever, really, you know?
Yeah.
And so, you know, in thinking about that time, you know, I was just trying to get any bit of information I could. So at my dance school that I was at, called Dance God, they had summer workshops. They bring in guest teachers. Well, they brought in Lisa Latouche, who had just come from New York and was mentioning taking class with Gregory and some of these names. And I was like, okay, here's access to this information. And I kind of latched on to Lisa, and she recommended that I take the Sean Cheeseman Dance Camp, which was Sean Cheeseman's like a commercial choreographer and actually one of the founding members of Decidedly Jazz, if I'm not mistaken. So he would come back and run a summer camp, which also is just like, I'm sorry, I'm on so many tangents right now.
But I love it. It's perfect because that's how we have to talk about your life and a dance life. I think that's the best way to talk about it.
Just the example of also like giving back, you know, thinking of Sean had this big commercial career, but he would bring great artists to Calgary to run an intensive specifically in Calgary. And then Lisa recommended I go. And then that first year I went, they brought Brill Barrett from Chicago, who is one of the founding members of Mad Rhythms in Chicago. And if you know anything, if you don't know who Mad Rhythms is, number one, look them up. Number two is like the dancers that came out of that company are some of the best to ever do it. And there's always been a lot of great tap dancers have come from Chicago. So that tradition lives on. And the thing that was so specifically interesting about getting to know some of the dancers later on and going to festivals, I'll eventually get to that, is like they all danced at such a high level, but they all danced differently. Like they all specific, and they dance all together all the time, but they all dance differently, which was really interesting that that came out of that. So Brill was just like, you know, another just like light in my life that introduced me to the form a little more. And then it was like, oh, well, this is happening at the end of the summer. So it was the Vancouver Tap Festival, which I believe it was like the third year.
Right.
Yeah, the third festival. So my family, we got in the car and we drove out to the festival and I took, you know, a few classes and I was like deer in the headlights. Like I was just like so green to the thing and not really aware yet. But just like big smiles and like, you know, just
joy,
kind of like overwhelmed. Yeah. But you know, like the thing I didn't realize then that has so much, I think, impact now was that the masters were still around at that time. These were like influential people, you know?
Absolutely.
And, you know, it was funny. I was in Toronto last summer and when you're around tap dancers, you're always discussing the state of it. Like, where are we at? Why are these kids like this? Why is this happening? What is this? You know, we're always just discussing. And just in one of those discussions, just thinking about the example we got to see. Because I remember at that time, you know, one of the popular dancers was probably Jason Samuel Smith, who's everybody wears his tap shoe now. But like,
I got a new pair.
Yeah, nice. But I mean, like what Jason was doing at like 23, I mean, I still pull this clip out, you know, that I have on my hard drive of him performing here. I think it was like in 2004. And he danced for like 20 minutes and it was just insanity. And it was all improvisation. And, you know, so we looked up to him so much. And then seeing he set such a positive example for us and like he kind of really pushed, you know, like, how do you not know who this is? And I miss that kind of pressure because I don't know if it exists today or that it can exist today, you know, with the times. And it's all good. You know, I will say that it's all good, but I do miss that. And so anyways, I saw the example he set. And then I saw, I mean, Jason, you know, Jason's teacher was Savion Glover. So then seeing like the respect and reverence he had for like Derek Grant, Savion Glover, and then seeing the respect and reverence that they have for like Diane Walker, and then seeing Diane Walker and the reverence and respect for like Jimmy Sly. Like you saw the lineage, you saw the respect, you saw the reverence, you saw all of it. And so I came in at the tail end of that and caught a glimpse of that, you know? And so that snowballed into me starting to like work a job during the year and, you know, saving my money, teaching a little bit, trying to share what I was doing so I could go spend time wherever it was at these tap festivals. So I'm a product of these tap festivals. And at one time, I think it was kind of like, it was like you were supposed to have like one or two mentors And then like that was your kind of training. And then like the information kind of got spread further out with these festivals happening, you know? So I was thankful at least I could access some of this information. And so I remember, you know, the 3 weeks in the summer I would go to start out with St. Louis Tap Festival, which was produced by Robert Reed, who's no longer with us, who also just like set the example of like respect and reverence. And so I would go, we went there the first year with a group of dancers from Calgary that Lisa had at the time. And we met a lot of the kids from Chicago that were in Mad Rhythms in Chicago. And that was like eye-opening. Like, like I thought I was like, oh, I'm pretty good at tap. Like, no, you're not. Like, you know, the level was insane. Mm-hmm. And it was just kind of like really eye-opening. And then from there, we would go to Chicago to the Chicago Human Rhythm Project. And then from there, we would go to LA, LA Tap Fest, which Jason Samuel Smith and Chloe Arnold were producing at the time.
Right.
And yeah, I think back to those days and it was just, it was a special time and, you know, a lot of growth, a lot of growing pains, a lot of figuring it out. I still feel like I'm figuring it out. But
yeah,
you know,
it feels like it's immersive though. You know, like your way, you were immersed in it, in the, not just the culture, but in this access to lineage, but also really prepared and like a sponge, like wanting to take in all of this information and wanting to do something about it. Not just, you know, not just classes, not just the dancing.
Well, and that was the biggest thing I think I got was like, it wasn't contributing to tap dance. Isn't being really good at tap dance. You know, you got to give something back to the thing, you know?
Yeah.
And I've always kind of had that in the back of my mind, you know? And so the other thing about those times that was really special was specifically who I was attending the festivals with, which most, if not all, are professionals in the field now, you know, and still all dancers I admire and, you know, look up to so much.
Great.
You know, it was just a really special time in my life that I do miss. And, you know, I will speak honestly, I feel like the festivals have changed a little bit now. They're a little bit
different. I was just going to ask you about how you feel about those.
Although, like, you know, I will say, like, tap dance is global now. It's happening everywhere, which is great. And the level's really high and it's cool. And I honestly haven't been at a tap festival in quite a long time, if I'm being completely honest.
You haven't had time.
You know, but it's from what I see, it feels like a little disconnected from the way I used to feel when I went there. And that could have been, you know, having the presence of some of these masters. And when I was in that presence, it brought me back to that same feeling that I felt the first time watching the challenge scene in the movie Tap, you know?
Yeah.
And so I will say this. I think it's a positive thing that there's like, quote unquote, like a tap industry now. And like people are working and people are traveling and there's a lot of talented dancers. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing. It's very cool to see.
And that's what happens as it kind of for a while dilutes, right? Or maybe it has to dilute because it's dispersing. And what seems to be missing, and I think for me, this is the same in my area of contemporary dance, the lineage is somewhat missing or has been shortened considerably. People think it happens from a peer or somebody who's just a generation older than them. People have lost this connection to ancestry, like you say, or a longer period of a lineage a little bit. It will come back.
Yeah, I actually completely agree. And I think part of it is having information so readily accessible to us at all times. You know, if you want the answer, it's in your phone, most likely.
Yeah. And you might have 30,000 or 3 million hits, you know, to like that you could possibly research. And it might be on the 8th page that the most important information for you is going to be on there. But who's going to take the time to get to the 8th page? You know, that's a research life, you know, So it is an interesting kind of predicament, dilemma, or a kind of
Well, and I say this to all say too, it's like, you know, like I'm constantly like trying to check myself too, where I'm like, oh, like am I doing, I haven't checked in with so-and-so lately. Like, you know, like I'm trying to still do my best, but you know, with the times too, it's like, as you know, rent's due on the first of the month, as Diane Walker says. And I just, you know, I gotta pay these bills, you know, so.
You got to pay up and deliver, right? You pay up and deliver.
It's definitely a challenge right now, just trying to find the balance, but you know.
Yeah. Do you sometimes feel like you're in the shadows of these people? Do you sometimes feel the weight of it all on you? Or have you come through that? I feel like you've come through that.
But maybe, like, I don't know. I want to try to uphold the integrity of this thing the best I can. You know?
Yeah.
And I do feel pressure.
Yeah.
With that. Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah.
I think the pressure is put on you as well as you feeling it yourself, right? A little bit. You feel external and internal pressure.
Well, and it's, I'm getting to a place of learning what to let go of, you know?
Right.
Where are we going? You know, I think about Tap Dance. Where are we going? Even watching the movie Tap again, I was like, oh, they were trying to do that. Oh, okay. You know, so I'm like, I don't know. I'm very, I'm always reflective, but I'm very reflective these days. And in saying that, I think I'm ready to maybe try and take some risks in my work, which is terrifying for me, especially coming, you know, like trying to, again, stay connected to the thing, you know?
But that's what the masters did, right? As well, in some way. I think coming back to what you were saying about culture and about it being a culture and it being connections to Black culture even, but there is an element, I feel, in what you've talked about and in all the masters that you've talked about. When people are like personally expressing at such a high level and have mastered a way of expressing themselves within, you know, a certain form. So here in tap dance, the culture grows and is elevated through that personal expression. But there's two things that happen. That personal expression is also, like you were saying, to give back, right? To contribute to the culture as much as it is to feel like you have a place in the culture. You are making your mark on the culture, but you are also giving back to the culture. And there's an enriching potentially that you can be doing. You're definitely contributing to that culture. And I wonder if you're talking a little bit about when it comes to risk-taking, the risk-taking is you've found a level of personal expression, which is sought after, which is like, you know, extremely, you know, kind of sophisticated and nuanced and special. And then to risk all of that to go somewhere else, and you're not essentially risking that because that's what you're taking with you. But I think it puts you in a place of having more and wanting to contribute more beyond that to the culture. And I feel like that's the move that the masters had to make, but it came from inside. They weren't trying to become masters, you know, like they weren't trying to be, they were just following their own belief and conviction through that form. And I feel like that's what you do, but I feel like that's what you're talking about. So I wonder if there's anything in that.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're on the same page. And I think a lot of what I'm looking at also is musicians specifically, like thinking about the jazz tradition of, you know, playing standards and seeing how much, I feel even weird saying the word jazz because there's a lot in that as well, but like just seeing how that American music has evolved, you know, also. So yeah, that's where I'm at in creating this show right now in conversation. I'm in collaboration with Christian Alexandrov, who's a Bulgarian pianist. He's also plays percussion, which is very cool. And has played for tap dancers for a long time. And funny enough, to come full circle, we just got together yesterday. I realized that he was the first musician that ever played for me on stage in Calgary, like over 20 years ago.
Wow.
As I was like 16, figuring it out on stage. And, you know, so it's kind of cool to come back full circle to that. And yeah, I'm excited to work with him because he's also very open and he really knows how to play for tap dancers.
Nice.
Already, you know, that's another part of the disconnect that's maybe happened as well, is like musicians and tap dancers like came up together. A lot of the drummers used to tap dance. Like they studied the form. Like a lot of them could hit steps, could, you know, actually do the thing. And then that connection and that knowing that they were like went hand in hand. And now there is a bit of a disconnect. And I feel like, you know, I've dealt with a little bit sometimes on the West Coast, like pretentiousness in the jazz scene, like, no, you can't do that here. Like if I show up at the tap jam with my board, you know, like I've had to pay some dues that way too. So it's cool to find musicians that are open to it. And then also, you know, not, if they're open to it, be willing to support us in the way that we need musically.
So I'd love to know a bit more about, well, two things. As you open the door, but I'm have people been against tap dance happening in a jazz concert in Vancouver? Is that what you mean by no, you can't do that here? Or do you mean something more specific in terms?
So, I mean, there's been a couple times when, like, say I've shown up to a jazz jam as a tap dancer. Okay. And there's, you know, you have to approach the thing differently, because most of the time, say if it's a tap dance concert, the tap dancer is dancing the whole time over the tune, right? Mm-hmm. Or if it's a tap jam, same kind of thing, like where the tap dancer is going to dance over the entire tune. Mm-hmm. Well, in a jazz jam setting, you need to approach it a little bit differently, like in terms of, you know, I might treat myself like a horn player in that instance, where I'm only going to take a solo, like when it's my turn on the form. You know, I might take a couple choruses if it's new and I'm checking out the vibe and people are looking at it, give me side eye, like, who is this kid? What are you doing here? Like, I'm kind of like, okay, maybe I'll take my two choruses and then I'm out, like dip my toe in the water and test to see if it's cool.
Nice.
But, you know, I felt a little bit at times, you know, a little bit of like, they're here, you know, and I was like, you know, you take that in and it's like, but I was talking to Jason Samuel Smith about a month ago, and he was saying when he was in LA, he kind of dealt with the same thing a little bit. So, you know, finding musicians that are hip to it, and then also just leaving the room for us, because I was touring a show in May of last year, and fantastic drummer on the gig. But, you know, we were like, can we leave a little more space for us? Because mm-hmm. the way you're playing, like it's, there's not a lot of room. Like it doesn't matter if I'm here or not, if you're playing that full, right?
Absolutely.
And like, he didn't take to it well. And it was more like, okay, fine. Like he really like laid out completely. And it's like, no, we still want you to play, but like, you know, be engaged. And like, we need room, you know, we don't want to have to fight for our place in the music.
Yeah.
And it doesn't necessarily, we don't need to be the feature at all times. Like we can lay out and we can comp and we can hold time for you. And so you have room to stretch and all that. But
it's interesting. Yeah. Because it really is improvising as an ensemble, right? I think it can happen that people get comfortable improvising with certain people, and then they feel a vibe there, and then.
Well, and I think you know, it's, if you know, playing for tap dancers is a specific thing, I think, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like another. Well, this is the second part of my point is, or my kind of curiosity is, whether or not in those instances you do treat, and I think you do treat tap as a kind of instrument, like not necessarily replacing one of the instruments, but it is its own instrument. Essentially, it makes its own sounds. It's another instrument in an ensemble,
you know. Yeah, it's, and you know, as a tap dancer, you have a lot of freedom. You can play melodically, you can play percussively, you have a lot of freedom. It doesn't necessarily fit into, you know, we're not just the drummer if there's no drummer, you know, like there's a lot more to it that goes into it. Yeah.
I have different teachers at the moment. You know, Jim Hibbard is one of the kind of old guard. I also have other tap dancers who very much tap on the lyrics of songs. And mm-hmm. as a contemporary dancer, it drives me crazy. I'm going to say they know it drives me crazy. I cannot do it. I'm very vocal about it. I'm never like, I don't like it. I have a really hard time. It makes me feel actually sometimes quite upset that that's how I have to tap in that class. And I get it in a certain way. And it's great because I'm learning so much. I do not like just dancing on the lyrics. It makes no sense to me whatsoever. So anyway, I just wanted to share that.
I mean, that becomes a specific choice, I think, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I've seen a lot of very cool choreographic ideas. Like one of my favorite things that I've ever seen is like people choreograph to like MCs that are very, who are like rhythmic and intricate. Mm-hmm. And when they choreograph note for note to the MC's rhyme, I'm like, oh my God, I love this, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I hear you. I mean,
yeah, it's like a stylistic thing, right? And then I'm just sharing that it's not my preference. That's also connected a little bit to me, to another question I have for you, is around teaching and around this line between personal, like teaching in personal way and then syllabus potentially, which we...
Oh, Lord, you're going to take me there. Oh, yeah, Lord.
I know. Sorry. But I'm also very interested in whether or not, how that might be useful for people to understand and what they need to understand maybe from your perspective about syllabus.
I don't think it's useful whatsoever. I'm going to go out and say that. I don't think syllabus, this is what syllabus, and we're talking to somebody that grew up doing syllabus because that was what was being taught in my studio. And I mean,
absolutely.
I was 8, I didn't know any better, right?
Yeah. And I did syllabus for every dance form you can imagine when I was growing up too. So I'm with you. I have like certifications, crazy. But anyway, please continue.
Mostly like white men that condensed an art form and sold it to small towns and a way to teach this form that was so disconnected from what it actually was. And it had such a, I mean, I remember doing stuff at the bar, like, that's a ballet connotation on tap dance. Mm-hmm. That's not actually what it is, mm-hmm. you know? And I can only speak to the syllabus that like I did, but it was like, even the there was like a music component. It mm-hmm. didn't pertain to anything that I had to learn later, you know? Mm-hmm. The other thing that I didn't like about it, and I don't like about the syllabus, is that it removes the play aspect, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like a shuffle is done one way in the same rhythm always. Mm-hmm. So, okay, maybe from a technical aspect, maybe. But the minute, like if I say I'm teaching somewhere new for the first time and I don't know what I'm getting when I get in the room, and it's like, you know, just even trying to change the rhythm of a shuffle becomes a struggle because mm-hmm. it's like ingrained. I don't like that it ingrains like a autopilot, you know. Tap dancing is a very intelligent art form that requires you to be engaged and present. And, you know, the ability to express, and that comes through speaking with your feet. And so, you know, if you're limited to doing a step one way, it eliminates all the play, you know, and that's like the best part about tap dancing. It also eliminates individuality, which, you know, I feel like, yes, in certain situations we need to be together and this and that. But like, that's the best thing about this art form is you get to find yourself through it, you know?
Yeah.
And the syllabus doesn't teach anything like that. Also, no touch on improvisation. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I get students that are 15 that have never improvised before. And so then it's very scary and intimidating, you know? And we have to start with the building blocks. But it's like, you know, I just don't think this art form can be like, I shouldn't say I don't think, it can't be in an 8-step, like by level 8, you've figured it out. It really is a lifelong commitment to you know, discovering things, you know, mm-hmm. within it.
Yeah. Because I think the creativity of it is, I'm finding like the amount of information I am gaining about music and about rhythm from learning tap is way more important to me. Oh, well, it's also, you know, kind of why I'm doing that and other forms for the rhythmic musical, you know, kind of sensibilities that I want to hone in my own practice. But I have to play to find that. And I can't remember the names of steps, but I can remember, I sometimes can remember the name of the step if it's come with a story of a attached to a lineage, which makes right. me feel like I'm kind of more connected to the reason why this sound has a statement, you know, that sound or those, you know, combinations of sounds are making a statement about something. And then it feels really special to have learned it, but not necessarily the name of it and not necessarily to say, you know, at this level, because we put levels on classes, right? I'm too intimidated to come to your intermediate class, but I'll come to your advanced beginners. And I'm waiting for the time when I take the risk to jump into intermediate
class. I mean, and honestly, half the time, the title to me doesn't mean anything. It's about who's in the room.
Yeah, you know, and it's different with each
really
teacher.
What it is. And it's like, you know, it's like I'll teach advanced sometimes where it's not, you know, and I'll teach intermediate where it is more advanced, you know? And so it's really about who's in the room at the time for me.
Yeah. That's cool.
And I very, very have a hard time planning teaching because for me, it's, you know, I might have a tune in the back of my mind, but it's an exchange of energy, right?
I feel the same way.
I might have an exercise, you know, I might have something, but it's like, it's an exchange of energy. So, you know.
Yeah. And I really appreciate.
We work on what feels right at the time, you know, and it can be something very, like one small idea can, you know, spark a whole thought process, you know.
Yeah. Well, I've benefited so much from warm-ups from all the different teachers I've had because everybody approaches that differently. So I have like, you know, for my own practice, I have so much that I can draw on just to get me into a state to feel ready to play. That's kind of, that's all I know. I've learned a lot of tap choreography that goes whoo, straight out of my head within, you know, 6 weeks. But that's because I'm not doing it for that reason. And I really love that. And it's giving me a lot of confidence to play with rhythm and sound and to play with my feet, because in contemporary dance, I feel like we don't do that enough. And I'm getting a little bit to your work with Radical Systems, but because I think with that company and with Shay's choreography, there is a bit more activity kind of in the feet, you know, a bit more kind of rhythmic stuff that happens. And, but we can sometimes get trapped into kind of ignoring if it's not like a petit allegro or it's not something like that that's been formalized as a sequence that includes the feet, it can definitely disappear into shape, right? So the rhythm aspect is very clear in the feet. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about your role in telemetry, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, nothing changed for me in terms of, I felt like in that show, I was a musician for the dancers. I felt like, I don't feel like, I thought, number one, Shay reached out. I very much have learned a lot from Shay in terms of how to get work up. I'm inspired by his work ethic. You know, he stayed with me before. That guy works so hard and I'm very inspired by him, not only in the studio, but like, you know, on the admin side, and which I hate doing, but I'm like, oh, if I want to get this up, I better do it. You know,
I got to do it. Yeah.
Pull my socks up.
Got to do it.
But like, I felt like, you know, he approached me about the show. I thought it was a cool concept. There was always like the, like, I don't know, like, I'm not sure. And then, you know, I did the thing and I enjoyed it. And it was challenging physically for me. I still feel like I maintained myself as a tap dancer within that show. I don't feel like I strayed away from it. The thing that became challenging to me was in the middle of the show, I didn't feel like there was a lot of a pulse to the music, you know? Yeah. So, you know, this whole time, my whole life emphasis on holding time, you know, one is your best friend, like all these things. And then it's like, oh, there's like all this open space. So it kind of was like an interesting journey to I guess, play like a soundscape, I guess. Like, that's the way I kind of looked at it.
Yeah.
For the dancers. But I also kind of fell in love with like dancing out of time, yeah, which is like another way of doing things at times. Yeah. But, you know, like I will say, like having that opportunity to just show up and be able to dance, I wish was something more that we had as tap dancers, you know? Mm-hmm. So getting a taste of what that was like, I mean, I felt like I was on vacation. I'm like, I just got to show up and do the thing. And then I get to go home and that's it. And, you know, we got to tour to a lot of places. And I think we did about 50 shows. And, you know, I loved just showing up and going to the theater because that's a rare luxury. Like,
yeah,
even in getting this show up, the amount of work that goes into just outside the actual thing, and then mm-hmm. you know, trying to balance my focus, you know, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And still tough. Try to maintain creativity. It is tough. There's a lot that goes into it. So I'm learning to try and take at least one day a week away from everything to just, I'm learning from myself that I need that at least one day away from the admin. Even, I wouldn't say creatively, because creatively I'm like probably still going to watch some footage and like listen to music and like, you know, all that, but like just one day away from it all, so I can come back fresh the next day.
And I think what that does is it gives you time to slow down to make a choice. You know, so much is like 15-minute increments, I find, or like every hour or every hour and a half you're scheduled for something. Like if you give yourself a day at least, you can make different choices, I think, in that time.
That's something I'm learning as I get older, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, even going back to telemetry, like thinking of that show and in the original version, I think I danced all 60 minutes, learning how to pace myself. Because I've always been kind of like a dancer that like goes.
Yeah.
And like being on the tap festival circuit for a few years, it's like you get your solo, you might get 5 to 10 minutes and you want to say something in that 5 to 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. And then trying to do that in Chase show for an hour, it's like I physically can't do that. So it was a good lesson in trying to like pace myself.
Yeah. Like, why am I still talking is one of my expressions. And like, if you're dancing for an hour, you're like, why am I still dancing? Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. So that was a big lesson that came from that show as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Okay. So you've got the show coming up at the Dance Center. Very excited for this. And you said it's called In Conversation, May 23rd to the 25th, I believe.
23rd, 24th. Yeah.
So you've got two shows, which is really wonderful. It's around the time of a tap festival as well at the Dance Center. So the tap world is taking over.
Yeah, Lisa Latouche is going to be in town. She's also showing her film Tracks on the Saturday, which is actually Tap Dance Day. Mm-hmm. National Tap Dance Day, we celebrate Bill Bojangles Robinson. So it's pretty cool that's all lining up. I want to also mention about the show. I have one of my best friends and big brothers in this dance, and one of the most, like, honestly, brilliant minds, Matthew Shields, coming from Houston. He's originally mm-hmm. Canadian, but he's coming from Houston. So he'll be in town helping direct the show as well. I'm very excited about that. And
excellent.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. Yeah,
so cool. And then what's next? I mean, I know it's enough, but
so I'm headed to Europe mid-June. I'm still figuring that I have a one-way ticket right now.
Do you?
I have a one-way ticket. I'm trying to see how much I can set up before I come back. But yeah, I'm going to Warsaw, Poland. I don't know if I'm saying that correctly, but Warsaw, Poland. Yes. I'm going to Berlin, Amsterdam, back to Zurich, which I haven't been in pre-pandemic. Mm-hmm. And then hopefully Paris, and maybe, yeah, I'm seeing what else I can set up. I'm trying to do it all at the same time. And it's kind of just.
Absolutely. And is this, are these tap festivals that you're going for? Are you going back?
Like, more like, I think Poland, you could probably call it a tap festival. There's only a couple artists, but I am performing and teaching classes. And then the rest are kind of like workshops and whatnot. My friend in Paris, he usually sets up a night with some musicians for us while we're there, while I teach some classes. But Yeah, it'll be nice because I've only been to Europe like in the cold months. So I've never been in the summer. So I'm like excited to go out and, just I need a little break from the, not that it's going to be a break, but just a little break from Vancouver and the constant grind here. So it'll be a nice little trip. And then what else do I got going on? I bought the handles, but I'm trying to start a t-shirt company. Also attached to maybe not necessarily an actual like Tap clothing line, but with maybe nods to it.
Ah, nice.
And then I've got another project that I want to start in the fall, which will mostly be online, but it entails trying to, maybe bring back some tap dance shows that didn't get seen by a lot of people, and seeing if we can show them maybe online just to give them life again, because I think there's a lot of times, especially tap dance show, they happen like once or twice. There's very few that get their legs. And I hope things are shifting. And I actually do think things are shifting to where we're going to start to see more touring shows. I want to see tap dance like on the stage everywhere. I want to see dancers like having work, like performing work nonstop. I really want that. I'm straight up going to be honest with you. I'm jealous of the contemporary community and how many jobs there are. I'm jealous and I want some of that work for us, So
And rightly so. I mean, I yeah, that's awesome. That's so cool. Well, off you go. Start
yeah.
it.
Yeah, we
No,
got
but it's
work to do, that's for
yeah,
sure. We got a
totally got work to
lot of
do,
work
but
to do.
yeah, but I can imagine that it's all for me at this speaking with you, there's so much context there and so much and kindred spirits in this in for our art forms. But collaboration is such a key thing. Play is such a key thing. Context, understanding lineage and understanding multiple lineages that have formed a culture is so important. But it doesn't mean that we have to be like we bring that with us into a future vision for our art form, as opposed to feeling kind of pulled back or held back by its history.
Well, I think that's the toughest thing that tap dancers need to get over. Or maybe the younger ones don't have that same pressure again, because maybe it's not their fault. They didn't get to meet some of the masters, so they're seeing different things happening, and they're very courageous in the work they're making, and I think it's great, So I think it's this is more my journey when I speak of wanting to take more risks in my work.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like there's something about that that you can constantly evolve as a tap dance artist, right? In your own right, which is what and contemporary dance as well is now having to include these like the definition of contemporary dance includes tap dancers, it includes ballet dancers, it includes flamenco dancers. And so there's something about, almost like contemporary dance is all of it, and therefore, contemporary tap, contemporary flamenco, contemporary ballet are all as well their own kind of areas.
I mean, oh man, I don't know how I feel about the word contemporary tap. Like, it just it's like that. Like, I
Feels
don't
like
know.
part of the syllabus thing for you.
Well,
Maybe it's a
yeah, a
similar
little
thing.
bit. Like we kind of clown like contempo tap when it feels like whatever contemporary dance really means. I don't know where it's like the movement and then the tap happen. I don't know. I'm not about that, and that's just my personal flavor. But I'm proud to wear a tap dance on my t-shirt and move forward with it in that way. But yeah.
I sometimes just think contemporary is actually only referring to the type of music sometimes that people are using when it, comes to that stuff, and it's kind of a justification for using pop tunes to age myself. But that can, in some ways, sometimes that's what it's doing. But it's trying to say that it's part of a contemporary culture, but it's talking about a pop culture. It's not talking about culture on a deeper level of what culture could mean, does mean, has meant.
Yeah, I mean,
But
and even where we're at, like, it's like, I don't know, I love how Nicholas Payton hates the word jazz and refers to it as BAM, Black American music. And the spectrum that that is huge. And that's, you know, what it is. So,
Wow, that's amazing. So how long is your show?
It'll be 60 minutes.
Yeah.
Let's hope it's 60 minutes. And if we get a, you know, catch some inspiration, it might be a little longer.
And is it improvised? Like, is some of it set-ish?
There's going to be like set arrangements.
Yep.
Some that are a little more open, but mostly I'll be improvising. I'm trying to have some set sections just because it is a long, you know, 60 minutes is a long time.
Yeah. The pacing but yourself thing. Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be mostly improvised. And I say that improvised with context, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely.
The forms of the grooves. It's not like I'm walking on stage and he's just starts playing and then I go and we end up somewhere.
Doing something together.
That'd be cool. I don't know if like people would like it at the end, but you know, might end up being really great or not to go either way. But
Yeah. So great. That's so awesome. Well, thanks so much for taking this time, Danny. It's been
great. Yeah, thank you for having me.
Pleasure. Cool. And really look forward to the show. And best of luck with all of it, everything. I'll see you in class. Quite excited.
All right, we'll see you later tonight. Okay. All right.
Bye. Thank you so much for listening. We would love for you to subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts, as this will help other listeners find us and help us to grow our dance audience. We'll be back next month. In the meantime, you can follow us on Facebook at The Dance Center, Twitter at Dance Center, and Instagram at The Dance Center BC. And if you'd like to support our work, please consider making a donation. Just go to our website at thedancecenter.ca, where you'll find extensive information about our upcoming programs and events. The music for The Dance Center podcast was composed by James B. Maxwell. Always a pleasure to connect with you through dance. Until next time.